Welcome to Power Play. I'm Todd Vanderhayden. Joyce Napier is away. Today on the show, will COVID vaccines become mandatory in Canada?
I'm signaling this as a conversation which I believe provinces and territories, in support with the federal government, will want to have over the next weeks and months.
Health Minister Jean-Yves Duclos there raising mandatory vaccination as a tool to crush the COVID-19 pandemic. But the actual decision would come down to the provinces. In the fight against the virus, though, could Canadians soon face mandatory vaccinations? Plus, can Canada send in the troops?
But it shouldn't surprise anybody that it's not a limitless number of federal health care resources.
A kind warning, but a clear warning to some provinces and territories that they need to act now.
The government warning federal resources are limited as the provinces start to ask for help. In one remote First Nation in Ontario, more than half the community has now been quarantined. We'll ask the federal Indigenous Services Minister, Patty Hajdu, and a former Grand Chief of that First Nation here on the show. Plus, bigger picture, the Omicron battle lines.
Mr. O'Toole seems once again more focused on his own job and appeasing members of his own party than supporting Canada's healthcare workers.
The federal intergovernmental affairs minister attacking Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole's stance on vaccine mandates after O'Toole slammed the Trudeau government's pandemic response and blamed the prime minister personally for the current lockdowns. As Canadians battle the biggest COVID wave to date, will this political fight sway support? Our Friday strategy session digs in. This is Power Play, so let's get to the players. Starting with a story getting a lot of buzz today, and rightly so. Could we see COVID vaccination made mandatory in our country in the coming months? Other nations like Austria, Germany, Italy are moving to do just that. And now it is a conversation the federal health minister says we need to have in Canada. Jean-Yves Duclos says mandatory vaccines would ultimately be up to the provinces, but is the federal government ready to push the provinces to do it and fight the inevitable opposition? The looming debate comes amid clear signs the crisis is getting worse in parts of our country. Case in point, a remote part of Ontario, the Bearskin Lake First Nation, has over half its community currently in quarantine with a state of emergency in place since late last year. They've been asking for military help for a week now. Joining me is the Indigenous Services Minister, Patty Hajdu, who previously served as Canada's health minister for the first 20 months of this pandemic. Minister Hajdu, thanks for taking the time for Power Play today.
My pleasure to be with you today.
And I want to get to the Bearskin Lake First Nation, but your thoughts on what the health minister, Jean-Yves Duclos, had to say today about vaccines, saying they're the only way out of this crisis and Canada should start to have a conversation now about mandatory vaccines.
Well, look, what we know is that vaccines are an effective tool to save lives and stop hospitalizations. In fact, that's what I'm focused on as the Indigenous Services Canada Minister, is supporting First Nations communities that in many cases have high rates of vaccination, but in other cases have somewhat lower rates of vaccination, get people protected as quickly as possible. We know that, you know, the vaccine can present in very severe illness for people who are unvaccinated, and it increases people's risk of death dramatically. So vaccines are an important tool to protect ourselves, to protect our families, and to protect our healthcare system.
Making them mandatory, of course, would be controversial in some quarters. I mentioned other countries are doing it. Do you think it's time for Canada to do it?
Well, listen, I know that vaccine mandates have encouraged people to get vaccinated across the country, but certainly across the world. I will just repeat again, vaccines are an incredibly important tool to save lives and to prevent severe illness with COVID-19. The evidence has been extremely clear. It's emerging evidence from the UK, but certainly even Canadian evidence that people who are vaccinated have a dramatically lowered risk of hospitalization and, of course, of death. And so we need to work together to make sure that as many people as possible can get vaccinated to protect themselves and to protect their community and their families.
As a longtime health minister, you know, of course, that ultimately it would be down to the provinces and territories to do something like that, to make vaccines mandatory. How would that work exactly, though?
Listen, I'm not going to speculate about where provinces and territories are at. I do know that everybody is working incredibly hard and incredibly collaboratively to make sure that vaccines are available, that people have access to information in ways that is culturally appropriate so they can make decisions for themselves, so they can support their communities to get vaccinated. It's really important that we as leaders step up and we continually support people that are working really hard to vaccinate individuals, those that are hesitant, those that are nervous, those that perhaps aren't getting information in ways that, that comfort them and that give them that courage to take that step. But I will repeat, it is an incredibly important tool to save lives and to keep people healthy and, of course, to protect our healthcare system.
One other question on this. I mean, I know that the government, like all of us, looks at public opinion, and it would seem to me that a lot of Canadians who have been double or triple vaxxed now would support the idea of mandatory vaccination. Certainly, as we see this Omicron wave, people are tired, they're frustrated, and as you know, a lot of the people who are in hospital now are the unvaccinated. So, public opinion and your read on where it's at right now in our country.
Well, of course, people are tired, they're scared, and we're seeing disruptions to our everyday lives and to critical services. I mean, we're going to talk in a moment about Bearskin Lake, and when people get sick in high degrees of numbers and have to isolate, it can be incredibly disruptive. Everybody's exhausted. I'll just say this again. The saddest thing, though, are preventable deaths. And preventable deaths are, you know, happen when people oftentimes are not vaccinated and they haven't had an opportunity to get vaccinated. They haven't taken that opportunity to get vaccinated. And so I stay focused on the work that I need to do as the Minister of Indigenous Services, which is to support First Nations communities to make sure they have access to vaccination, they have access to the resources they need to help encourage and support members in their own communities to get vaccinated, and of course that boosters doses are available as they become available in the country.
All right, let's talk about Bearskin Lake, because of course that is under your purview, and we are going to be speaking to the former Grand Chief Charles Fox later on the show. He spoke to the media today and called you out specifically, Minister Haidu, saying the First Nation is running into a dismissive attitude from the federal government. And he said if this was happening in Toronto, there would be an international outcry. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, listen, first of all, my heart goes out to people in Bearskin Lake and every community across the country that's really experiencing surge. But in these remote communities, Bearskin Lake being so far away, you know, fly in, obviously small numbers of people, when a high degree of people get sick and or have to isolate because they're close contacts, it puts the functioning of a community in jeopardy. I've been working with the chief of the community, Chief Kamitawataman, obviously Grand Chief Fox and others over the holidays to make sure that Bearskin Lake has what they need, whether it's financial resources, about 1.2 in this current surge alone, whether it's individuals. We have five or so health professionals, another 32 being paid to help take care of essential services like chopping firewood, delivering food, whether it's other logistic issues, whether it's covering the cost of charters, as I committed to the chief. We're going to be there for Bearskin for as long as it takes with whatever it takes. And I just, you know that our officials are working extremely well together. Every single day they have a call, we'll continue that work.
They've been asking for help from the military for a week now. Can you give us any clear timeline, though, on when that will happen?
Well, we did get a formal request last night from Ontario. As you can imagine, we can't send the military in until there is a formal request. And so now we've been working with the community throughout today to understand what kinds of skill sets they're looking for. Again, what gaps we're looking to close so that we send the right kinds of professionals to help Bearskin Lake. And we should have news very shortly.
Patty Haidu is Canada's Indigenous Services Minister. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. And we appreciate your time today, Minister Haidu.
Thank you so much for the time.
All right, so that's the federal government on the crisis at Bearskin Lake First Nation. But what do the residents need to get through this crisis? Let's find out. Bearskin Lake First Nation member and former Anishinaabe Nation Grand Chief Charles Fox joins us now. Grand Chief Fox, it's good to have you with us, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity.
I know you were listening in to my interview with Minister Haidu. Your immediate reaction to what she had to say?
Well, I applaud the 1.1 million that's been allocated for the crisis in Bearskin Lake. But just to give you an example, we need charters to go in there on a daily basis. The charters alone are almost $1 million. So when you look at the crisis on the ground, the wood cutting, the distribution of supplies, the security, the medical needs, the vehicles, the mechanical needs and supports for the vehicles, I mean, the list goes on and on. The $1.1 million doesn't come anywhere to addressing the needs of the First Nation. And when you look at isolation, there's no capacity for isolation in that community of 400. The negatives that have tested negatives with the testing and the positives are cohabiting. The Omicron variant is going to keep on reinfecting. You got to take an all-out approach, a holistic approach to contain this variant. And right now, that's not happening.
I'm curious how you would characterize the experience between the First Nation and the federal government during all of this.
Well, like I said, there's definitely indifference. I mean, this is a community of a little over 400 with 201 infections. And if you compare that to any municipal setting or any setting down south, if you had that rate of infection, you would have a pronged approach from all levels of government and other sectors to tackle that community. But because we're removed, we're out of sight, out of mind, and we're First Nation, people just have an indifferent attitude towards us.
What are you hearing from residents in Bearskin Lake? What are they saying to you, Grand Chief?
The residents are fearful. They're tired. The ones that are working on the ground, the 25 to 30 that are healthy enough to help, they're exhausted. They're running on fumes, and they're asking for help. The people that are quarantined are exhausted as well and fearful and stressed, and they need a lot of help in terms of mental health intervention, and that is not happening. Mental health issues are not being dealt with in the community at all. And with that fear and with that stress, the volunteers that are on the ground have built this bubble, and they're saying they don't want any interaction with any outside help that is coming in. That they want to maintain that bubble, they want to maintain that safety, and so you have that inherent fear. And one can't blame them. I can't blame them for that. And so how do you begin to address that type of environment that is in that community? Because Bearskin Lake needs a lot of help.
Grand Chief Charles Fox joining us from Thunder Bay today. We really appreciate your time. Thank you for this.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, Canada's drastic surge in COVID-19 cases putting a strain on hospitals right across our country. They're struggling to cope with rising admissions and staffing shortages, making things much worse. Take a look at this. Canada's biggest province, Ontario, reporting daily increases in hospitalizations and ICU admissions for days now. As of today, 2,472 people are in hospital. Of that, 338 are in intensive care. In our country's second biggest province, in Quebec, hospitalizations are up by 180 for a total of 2,133 people. ICU admissions are up to 229. Nationwide, weekly hospitalizations are up by 91%, and ICU admissions are up by 25%. Canada's top doctor, Theresa Tam, saying there is an explosion going on right now of community transmission. And so with hospitalization on an alarming rise across our country, is it time for more drastic measures like making vaccinations mandatory, as some European countries are doing? The federal health minister says he believes the time is coming to have that conversation. It is controversial, although one that many Canadians might already support. Listen to this.
It's a decision that will be made by provinces and territories at some point, whether it the move forward or not, that's going to be their decision to make. But what we see now is that our healthcare system in Canada is fragile. Our people are tired. And the only way that we know to go through COVID-19, this variant and any future variant, is through vaccination.
So, could mandatory vaccines be the best solution? And what measures can be brought in the here and now to save hospital capacity? Let's bring in the doctors. In Montreal, Dr. Christopher Labos is an epidemiologist and cardiologist. In Victoria, Dr. Amy Tan is a family physician and a clinical associate director, professor with the University of British Columbia's Faculty of Medicine. Good to have both of you with us today on the program, and thanks for your time. I'm going to start with you, Dr. Labos, and what you make of this notion that it's time for Canada to get serious and talk about mandatory vaccinations.
Well, it's certainly not a new discussion. It's something that we've talked about. It's just that the political will, and I don't think the public acceptance of it, was there up until potentially fairly recently. I think what's happening now with the healthcare system being stretched is, I think, demonstrating to people, you know, number one, how fragile the healthcare system can be and how devastating infectious diseases can be. You know, most people now watching this show have never lived through a pandemic. They don't have a living memory of what polio used to do to our society. And so the benefits of vaccination seem very abstract to most people, except that now you're seeing what the benefits and what the shortcomings of a non-vaccinated population look like. So the public attitude about this might start to be shifting, which is why I think you're seeing the federal health minister sort of dip a toe very gingerly into this debate and sort of raise the question of, could we start putting something like a vaccine mandate in place?
Yeah, well said. Dr. Tan, weigh in on this, your read on it, because as Dr. Labos is saying, you certainly see anecdotally that there is a lessening of tolerance going on the part of Canadians who have been double or triple vaxxed now when it comes to people who are unvaccinated.
So, yes, I agree. Vaccinations are a very big part of how we manage this pandemic. But I would differ with the minister on a few points or add to what the minister is saying. I don't think it's the only way or the only thing that we can do right now. We do need to be looking at airborne measures and making sure that people are wearing good fitting masks and looking at ventilation. But bigger than that and bigger than in our country, we need to be looking at vaccine equity globally, because even if Canadians are vaccinated, if half the world is not vaccinated, variants will continue to occur and they will come to Canada. And so I think we need to not lose sight of the bigger picture here as well.
And Dr. Tan, as a physician, would you support the idea of mandatory vaccinations?
I definitely recommend or support them in very specific places like healthcare and even schools to a certain extent. I think it is, what the public is willing to go with. We need to actually be looking at picking our battles, but also seeing where we can actually educate people. Because a lot of people who aren't getting their vaccines, it's because of known mistrust in the healthcare system. And I think we actually need to build trust rather than use penalties.
Dr. Labos, what about you?
Listen, if somebody asked me to vote on this issue, I would vote yes. I would be in favor of it. Now, the question is, it's very easy for me to say that. There are a lot of legal and constitutional aspects to this. So, I mean, it's all well and good to say this. The question is, how do you formulate the law? How do you draft it? What are the consequences? And so there are many issues to this that go beyond the simple medical aspect of it. I mean, I speak to the medical aspect of it. In a society where everybody's vaccinated versus a society where nobody's vaccinated, the society where everybody's vaccinated does better. We know less outbreaks, less strain on the healthcare system. But a lot of the difficulties that are going to be faced in terms of implementing this are going to be not medical ones, but they're going to be legal, constitutional ones and implementation ones as well.
Yeah, well said. All right. And the other thing I'm curious about, Dr. Tan, is what we're starting to see already when it comes to staffing shortages in hospitals, those on the front line, sort of in the here and now. How bad do you think things are going to get in your mind, and what can be done to try and mitigate that?
I think all of us are holding our breath for this month. We look at each other on the floor and go, how much longer can we sustain being short-staffed and over capacity for beds? Because it's not just furniture. It's actually not about the furniture. It's about the people trained to take care of patients. And it's not just COVID-19 patients that are feeling the constraints of an overburdened system. Anybody who needs healthcare right now is feeling the effects of being, our hospitals being short-staffed, and all of the resource restrictions are coming from this. So we need to keep that in mind as well. We need to be putting N95s on our healthcare workers. We need to be maximally protecting them. from outbreaks so that they're not out with symptoms. We need to be looking at ventilation. These are things that we continue to look at. And I think there's no simple one answer for a very wicked problem. And I think, you know, just trying to create binary solutions is probably not helping us at this point.
And Dr. Labos, here in Montreal, and I know in Quebec, hospitalizations are on a dramatic rise, more than 2,100 people now in hospital. We should point out 50% or so are unvaccinated people, but the idea of the rise in hospitalizations and, of course, inevitably ICU admissions.
Well, I think when you look at the projections that INES, the Quebec Health Agency, has put out, they're saying that within a matter of a couple of weeks, we may run out of hospital capacity for COVID patients. I mean, this is no longer a theoretical question of could we maybe run out of beds? The reality is that if the trend continues as is, it's a matter of weeks before there just won't be any space for people. And then you're going to start doing triage, which is nobody wants to do that, but it may come to the point. I think the hope is that the measures that were implemented around Christmas and New Year's are going to start to have an effect, and at least things will level off and maybe things will stabilize. But I mean, this wave has put a significant stress on the healthcare system, and anybody who's still going around and saying that the Omicron variant is a mild variant just has to look at the numbers and realize that is clearly not the case.
Dr. Christopher Labos in Montreal, Dr. Amy Tan in Victoria, great to have both of you on the program. And, of course, we salute all the frontline work both of you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Coming up for us, leaders spar as the Omicron wave surges.
The action and inaction by the Trudeau government is normalizing lockdowns and restrictions.
Almost 2 years into this pandemic, it's hard to believe that Mr. O'Toole still doesn't get it.
So, cutting through the noise, who has the right strategy to push vaccinations, stop the spread, and could Canada see mandatory vaccinations brought in? Our strategy session digs in next.
At a time when our healthcare system is under stress, Mr. O'Toole is encouraging people to do things that are adding to that pressure and that will continue to put Canadians and our healthcare workers at increased risk. Almost 2 years into this pandemic, it's hard to believe that Mr. O'Toole still doesn't get it.
Well, that was Intergovernmental Affairs Minister Dominic LeBlanc attacking Conservative leader Erin O'Toole over his argument that Canada should accommodate some unvaccinated people. O'Toole slamming Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's pandemic response this week and Trudeau's criticism of people who are unvaccinated. Listen to this.
There will be a small number that won't be vaccinated. How do we answer their questions, get that hesitancy down, and in some cases have reasonable accommodation to make sure that people don't get pink slips because they're not vaccinated? Mr. Trudeau mocks and actually attacks people that are unvaccinated, calling them misogynists and others. That's not going to get more people vaccinated, nor is constant reliance on lockdowns, because people have done their part. They've gotten vaccinated. And now with rapid tests, with masking, with distancing, with smart rules, a population that's largely vaccinated can properly manage COVID-19. We shouldn't be in lockdowns in the fourth wave.
Well, there are signs that tolerance for unvaccinated people wearing thin by those in our country who have been vaccinated with two or three doses and see surge after surge replaying like a bad movie. And now this plot twist, the possibility of mandatory vaccinations coming in the months ahead, maybe. Our strategist today, Greg McEachran from Proof Strategies, he leans liberal. Maureen Harquail is a conservative commentator. Anne McGrath, the national director of the New Democrats. And Greg Weston from Ernst Cliff Strategies. He's got our nonpartisan perspective today. Happy New Year and great to see all of you back in session. Greg McEachran, let's start with you. The Prime Minister taking a tough stance this week against unvaccinated Canadians. What did you make of the strong words by Justin Trudeau?
I think the strong words echo probably what a lot of us are hearing in our own groups of friends, acquaintances, work colleagues. There's not a lot of appetite for the unvaccinated. We heard this before Christmas, and we're also seeing other leaders like Macron of France using even stronger language. And we saw in the province of Quebec, the health minister say, you know, if you're not vaccinated, you might as well just stay home. And we also see in Quebec, they took a stand that you had to be vaccinated in order to go to cannabis and liquor stores. And they went from, I believe it was 1,500 vaccinations a day to 6,000. So when you talk about the carrot and the stick, it seems in this case, the stick worked. What really surprised a lot of people around Ottawa was the stance that Erin O'Toole took. It seems like he is really aiming at a subset of a subset. And as Dominic LeBlanc said earlier in your program, you know, one does, you know, it does look like he's trying to stay on as leader, and he's putting that ahead of healthcare advice for Canadians. He has a really interesting perspective about the unvaccinated. He has to deal with it in his own caucus. There are still MPs that aren't vaccinated in his caucus. There were MPs before Christmas from his caucus suggesting really odd things that he seems to be echoing right now. As a friend of mine said on Twitter, if we really do want to accommodate the unvaccinated, we're already doing it. They're in our hospitals. They're taking up beds. They're taking up attention. And they're spreading COVID. And I think what the Prime Minister has said really reflects the way a lot of us are feeling.
Maureen, what about you? Talk to us not only about what Justin Trudeau said in your mind, but also Erin O'Toole's stance and saying that governments should accommodate a small majority or minority of vaccine holdouts, even with a majority of Canadians vaccinated. What do you think the strategy is here for Erin O'Toole?
So, Todd, I think really when we look at it, we see that Canadians as a whole are about 80%, give or take, considered vaccinated, which is great. But I think one of the things that we're also realizing is that Canada and many other countries, in fact, have a group of our population that maybe with some more encouragement and direction and education, you might get them to a vaccine. But there is going to be a group, call it the holdouts, there will be a group that are unlikely to ever roll up their sleeve. So I think what Erin is really trying to say to Canadians is, you know, we need to somehow also find a path forward. You know, here in Ontario, of course, schools are now closed for another few weeks. Parents are frustrated. Certainly, we're seeing, of course, increases in the hospitals. No one wants to see that. Erin O'Toole doesn't want to see that. And I think he's trying to push the government to say, listen, somehow we have to find a path forward here, whatever that's going to look like. Some of that is also about providing and making sure that the provinces have everything that they need to be able to stay open and to push forward. Certainly, we're seeing it on the rapid test piece. You know, the Prime Minister announced on Wednesday that he's going to be getting 140 million rapid tests out. That's great, but it was done on the middle of this week. Provinces needed that kind of supply and knowledge that they would have that supply. They actually needed that in December when they were making decisions about January. Mm. So I think there's a attempt by Mr. O'Toole to really try to really figure out what's the going forward. There will be a group of Canadians for a variety of reasons that will not get vaccinated. So what do we do about them?
Let's bring in Anne McGrath to the conversation. Anne, how are you framing all of this?
Well, I mean, Mr. O'Toole is very clearly offside with the majority of Canadians on this issue, for sure. That's the case. And people can point to the hypocrisy of not requiring all of his MPs to be vaccinated, all of those kinds of things. But I did think that the glee with which Mr. LeBlanc jumped on this and the way that that news conference was handled today with basically inserting him at the very beginning to go on a real broadside against Mr. O'Toole was unseemly. I thought that it was, it is really trying to drive a harsh partisan wedge when there are so many issues that the government really needs to step up on. I mean, there are so many things that are a problem right now, whether it's the healthcare transfers, the staffing shortage in the healthcare field, the rollout of booster shots, the issues around rapid tests. I think Maureen is right. Those rapid tests are a little bit late. I mean, certainly in my family, people were frantically trying to get their hands on any kind of testing, whether it's PCR or rapid tests or whatever, during Christmas week. And, you know, there is a lot of blaming that's going on. And I think that while Mr. O'Toole is definitely offside, Canadians have, on the whole, the majority have very little patience with anti-vax sentiments. But I think there is equally a lack of patience with playing games with these issues.
Greg Weston, your take on unvaccinated Canadians now becoming a bit of a political football here.
Well, it's becoming a political football because the politicians are making it that, and I think they're making a big mistake. I'm totally with Anne on this. I think the one thing that is going to drive Canadians even crazier than anti-vaxxers is going to be politicians who want to turn this into a partisan game. It's not a partisan game. The state of our hospitals is getting to the point where there's panic setting in, frankly, in the medical community. This is not something that should be, it's your fault, it's not your fault. It's how do we get past this? And, you know, Todd, people I'm talking to, I haven't heard anybody say that government should take people out and hold them down on the ground and jab vaccines if they don't want them. The point is, if they don't get them, then they should be very, very restricted in their movements. They have a right not to be vaccinated. I think most people, Canadians, agree with that. But I also think most Canadians agree they do not have the right to for their behavior to cause a crisis in our hospitals, for other people to be denied the right to medical service because we've run out of beds and more to the point, we've run out of people, nurses and doctors to man our intensive care units. So I think this is turning into a very increasingly angry divide in Canadian society, and Erin O'Toole being the champion of the anti-vaxxers is just mind-boggling to me.
We're running out of time, but I just want to give each of you an opportunity to weigh in on the following. Do you think Canada should bring in mandatory vaccinations? Just ask you to keep it brief to make sure everybody gets a chance to weigh in. Starting with you, Greg McEachran, what do you think?
Well, it's not a partisan wedge. There are lots of conservatives who are very pro-vaccine. I'm not sure Erin O'Toole speaks for them. I agree with one of the doctors that you had on earlier. I think this targeted vaccinations, mandatory vaccinations, are probably a good place to start. Healthcare workers, it's already going on.
What about you, Maureen?
Well, you know, I think from my perspective where I sit, and I think most Canadians would probably be able to get themselves to that. Obviously, we've already got 80% or so that are already vaccinated. So I think that mandatory vaccine is going to be something that's going to be challenging for some Canadians. And, you know, whether that's going to be enough to even get them to still roll up their sleeves, you're still going to probably have some who will simply flat out refuse.
Anne McGrath?
In certain areas, it already is mandatory, and it should be in some of those areas, for sure. I don't think, and I think that for those where it doesn't make sense and where there are people who absolutely never will get the vaccine, I agree with Greg, there should be severe restrictions on the capacity to operate freely in society. So I think that there needs to be mandatory vaccines in areas like healthcare. I believe, you know, that the all MPs should be vaccinated. There are, you know, schools, there are places where their vaccines should be mandatory. And for the rest, I think that those people who are not vaccinated need to have restrictions.
Last but not least, Greg Weston.
Well, I think it was Greg who mentioned earlier that you know, Quebec put liquor stores and pot shops off limit, and suddenly there was a tenfold increase in the rate of vaccines. So maybe it doesn't take too much. If that still says that there are people out there who could get vaccinated, they don't have a medical reason for not. So it's a provincial thing. I think it's better to just simply make it more difficult for people to move around and infect other people. That's really the bottom line.
Greg Weston, Maureen Harquail, Anne McGrath, Greg McEachran. Great to see all four of you again. Happy 2022. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, you.
All right, coming up for us here on the program in just a minute, we're going to have this. The provinces are starting to ask for more and more federal support during the pandemic. What do they need, and are the resources actually there to support them? We're going to speak with the Big City Mayor's Caucus coming up in just a moment. Stay with Power Play. We'll be right back.
There are some types of support that the federal government will find harder to provide because we don't have the capacity. And that's also a warning, a kind warning, but a clear warning to some provinces and territories that they need to act now, because if they don't act sufficiently, it's going to be difficult for the federal government to help after because we don't have the capacity to do so.
Well, the pandemic has brought in Canada's unique jurisdictional issues to the forefront. The federal government in charge of procuring vaccines, rapid tests, as well as securing the border. The provinces are in charge of the actual vaccine rollout and maintaining hospital capacity. It gets very confusing because, of course, different provinces do different things and the rules seem to change every day. One level of government sometimes overlooked is the municipal level. And in some cases, cities are the first line of defense against COVID-19. Decisions made by city councils and mayors have some of the most direct impacts on Canadians day to day. Things like public transit, community support, even vaccine clinics as well. So what more support do municipalities need? Let's bring in Charlie Clark, the mayor of Saskatoon. He's also the vice chair of the Federation of Canadian Municipalities Big City Mayors Caucus. And good to have you with us. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, good to be here with you, Todd.
What's the big message you have for people watching here? As a mayor of a large city yourself, as we gear up for this big fight, long fight, no doubt, against the Omicron variant?
Well, you know, right through this whole experience, cities have been right on the front lines. And in Saskatoon, we're going through a combination of the pandemic, a severe cold snap, as well as the overdose and homelessness crisis that's affecting our communities. And I've been very proud of working with cities right across the country to see just how we and others have been able to keep our city services running, keep making sure that people can get to work or have the key services that they need if they're working from home, while also partnering with the provincial government, with our medical health officers to make sure that people are getting vaccines, people are getting what they need. But it's a challenging time. We're experiencing revenue shortfalls in transit, and we're on the front lines trying to address the housing issues. And so it's a really, really crucial time for all governments to be working together to make sure, as we fight this pandemic,
we can build
safe communities.
Yeah, you talked about working together. As you know, there are sometimes these blame games that go on between the province in question and the federal government. No doubt, of course, not helpful, although there can be frustration on all sides, of course, because we've never dealt with something like this before. The number one challenge from your vantage point that municipalities are facing here, you talked about revenue shortfalls. You talked about some of those key areas, running a city where you may not have the resources you need. And no doubt Saskatoon, like many places, also now worried about staffing shortages in key sort of areas.
Yeah, the most immediate issue that we're doing is to make sure that as Omicron's is, we're just hitting a spike in our community here now and a number of staff getting Omicron and isolating at home. We need to make sure we can provide the water services, the transit service, the snow clearing, all of those core and emergency services, fire and police, obviously, while making sure that, we're keeping our community safe. So that's an immediate urgent need. As we look at our planning and our overall ability to provide services over the long haul, in Saskatoon, we have projected a $13 million deficit in our budget for 2022. In other cities like Toronto, when it looks like just the transit impact alone, they're looking at more like an $800 million operating deficit and shortfall. And so we want to be partners working on the front lines. We do need federal support and provincial support to make sure that we've got what it takes to keep our services running so we don't have to cut them.
Do you feel that you're being heard?
Well, it's been a very active and engaged conversation. There was federal restart funding that was absolutely critical, and then a doubling of the gas tax that was critical. In our province, we've had some key provincial funding that has helped along the way, especially some infrastructure stimulus funding that has made a big difference. We just want to make sure we're heard and understood at just how crucial it is that cities have the capacity we need to be able to provide services, because we can't go to taxpayers and raise taxes in order to do that at a time when many, many people in our community are facing financial struggles as well.
Mayor Clark, I appreciate you taking the time to come on the program today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Todd. Much appreciated.
Charlie Clark is the mayor of Saskatoon. In a moment for us, the Press Gallery with their first political plays of 2022. And which politicians started the year off right? That's on Power Play, coming up next. And just like that, the first week of 2022 is over. The House of Commons not back in session yet, but politicians already dipping their toes into the waters, from condemning a scandalous party plane packed with Quebec reality TV stars to facing the heat for rapid tests and boosters the federal government forced into high gear already. So who started 2022 on a high note? Let's bring in the Press Gallery with their political plays of the week. We've got CTV News National Senior Political Correspondent Glenn McGregor and Emily Nicolas, who is a columnist with Le Devoir. Good to see both of you. Happy New Year to both of you as well. Glenn, I'm going to start with you. You're handing out a political play to the federal health minister today for his comments in a presser about vaccinations.
That's right. Jean-Yves Duclos, for the first time, really, we've seen the government kind of get out of ahead of public opinion on this hot button issue of people who are refusing to get vaccines. For over a year, the government has been trying to cajole, encourage, beg people to get vaccines. And it's worked for a lot of people, but there is this core group, and we're down to a few million people now, who are absolutely refusing. And those are the people who are massively overrepresented in the hospitalization statistics and also people going into the ICU. So they are very clearly a problem with this. And Duclos, what he's proposing is going to be controversial, proposing mandatory vaccinations and not just some limitations on the liberties of people who don't get vaccinated. Right now, the only real limitations are you can't travel internationally unless you've been vaccinated. You can't go on an airplane. And there's some inconvenience about not being able to go into restaurants and bars. But beyond that, we haven't gone nearly as far as some countries in Europe are doing. Austria, for example, Italy proposing to, starting in February, they're going to make anybody over the age of 50 is going to have to be vaccinated or they will face serious financial consequences. Loss of salary. Fines up to 1,500 euros, about $2,100 Canadian, a real expense to that. And I think, you know, whether or not the federal government can make this happen because they believe it's going to require cooperation of the provinces, at least he's kind of reflecting what a lot of people are really feeling, that these restrictions that we're all experiencing now on our personal liberties, kids can't go to school, we can't go to restaurants now here in Ontario, can't go to the gym. There is going to be a consequence and a steep financial consequence to the people who are causing that problem. And I think it was a brave position. It may be politically costly to him and his government. It may provoke a lot of blowback, but I think he deserves credit for at least putting it on the table.
And Emily, we want to get to your play in a moment, but just if you can react, what do you think about what Jean-Yves Duclos had to say?
I think there's a lot of ethical questions behind the questions of vaccine mandates for the population at large. It's not necessarily worse than what we're seeing right now. For example, here in Quebec, trying to, you know, punish people for not being vaccinated by putting measures in place, use of the vaccine passports, that is not necessarily correlated with this is the most urgent or pressing public health issue, more than it is about limiting basically civil liberties of people who are unvaccinated as a way to push them to get vaccinated without saying so. So I think several provincial governments are toying with a line where they want people to get vaccinated and make it impossible for them not to be vaccinated, but they're not saying, outright, we want everybody to be vaccinated. And so, yes, I think, the good part about Jean-Yves Duclos' approach is that he's saying what he means, and that's not something that we've been hearing a lot from other provincial, health ministers this week.
The play of the week for you is to Justin Trudeau as he came out swinging against this party plane that got a lot of buzz, a lot of Canadians outraged across the country this week.
I don't know if it's the play of the week, but it's definitely the comic relief of the week. And definitely as well, I guess the scapegoats of the week, or, you know, people I think are living through this crisis, are fed up. And the Sung Wing Gate, or the, you know, the influencers who went down to Cancun and partied on the plane, you know, were an image that resonated with a lot of people because it contrasts so much with, you know, all the sacrifices that they're making themselves. Justin Trudeau condemned what the youth did, but also in French, he compared them to a bunch of, and I quote, Ostrogoths on vacation. Yeah. Ostrogoths are a Germanic people from the antiquity, basically, who had a role in the fall of the Roman Empire. And so everybody, you know, went on and started Googling Germanic people from back in the days. And so I think people needed that this week. It's obviously not a great policy achievement. And it's actually sad that we're, you know, the best points are scored at, you know, pointing fingers at individuals rather than government, you know, doing the best that it can in those kind of situations. But yeah, I thought it deserved at least some sort of notice or mention for this segment.
I got about 30 seconds for you, Glenn, just to weigh in on so-called Sunwing Gate.
You know what? If we all had video cameras going when we were in our 20s and did dumb things, I think it would be very embarrassing and none of us would have jobs today. So I understand at that point, I have a certain sympathy for this. There's a bunch of young people trying to get away on vacation. They were stupid about it. I think the thing that's really infuriating, though, you read some of the details of those stories, especially the reporting in the Journal of Montreal, about people sticking Vaseline up their nose so they can defeat the COVID test. That goes beyond just being a party animal on an airplane to Mexico. That is, you know, coming close to criminality and trying to beat a COVID test and put other people at risk once you get home. So I think Trudeau's comments were reflecting that kind of sentiment and outrage about what they saw.
Glenn McGregor, Emily Nicolas, great to see both of you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's your Power Play Day in Politics. I'm Todd Vanderhaeden. Thanks for watching. Evan Solomon will be here on Monday. Until then, have a safe and happy weekend ahead.